Case is taken under advisement, and the court will proceed to the sixth case.
Phone booth. That's right. We all have our little phone things here. Mr. Ginsburg, please.
Hello?
Mr. Ginsburg, please.
Sorry, hold on.
Hello?
Mr. Ginsburg, this is Robert with the Seventh Circuit.
I'm here.
Can you hold, please?
Yes.
Ms. Rumelow, this is Robert with the Seventh Circuit.
Good morning.
Can you hold, please? You should both be on.
Okay. Mr. Ginsburg?
Yes.
This is Chief Judge Flom, and I'm sitting with Judge Keeney and Judge Wood. And Ms. Rumelow, you can hear us also?
I can, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right. We have a 10-minute argument, and Mr. Ginsburg, you reserve 3 minutes.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. I know it's going to be hard to keep track of your time. We'll tell you if you would like me to do that.
When it's time to stop, I will stop.
All right. All right. You may proceed, Ms. Ginsburg.
Thank you, Your Honor. This is Bill Ginsburg. I'm the attorney for the appellant, Tony Markovich. And without seeing you, I want to thank the court for allowing us to appear by telephone. Hopefully the technology is working fine, and I'll speak slowly and into the microphone to make sure there's no difficulty.
Thank you.
This is a very simple case, probably one of the simplest that the court could look at. There's only one adjustment to look at, and there's only two facts that seem to be relevant to this particular case. And in this case, I have to convince this court that Judge Shabazz his decision was clearly erroneous and that there's a mistake was committed. And what you've got is a person in possession of cocaine for personal use, marijuana for personal use. Nevertheless, there's a small scale in his possession. And I think that piece of evidence is the whole determinant for this particular case. And the judge made the finding that Mr. Markovich possessed a gun in connection with a drug felony. And my whole argument is, essentially, if there's a small scale which could be either buying, used for buying or for selling, then the government's best argument is, well, there's obviously equal inferences that can be drawn. How can the judge be wrong? And the fact is, there's no other evidence that would be necessary. For example, you don't have the packaging materials. You don't have any large sums of money. You don't have anything else that would corroborate the scales used for selling. And finally, every time in the millions of cases that we see in which defendants say things that the courts always take at face value, why not here where when Mr. Markovich is confronted saying you've got a gun and he just simply says, people are trying to kill me. He's not saying I carry drugs and so therefore they could try to steal from me or I need to protect myself. He's delusional.
Mr. Ginsburg, this is Judge Wood, as you can probably tell, and I wanted to ask you how you respond to the following. As you say, there's the scale, the amount of the drugs that Mr. Markovich possesses strikes me as ambiguous. You know, some people don't distribute huge quantities, so maybe it was personal use, maybe it was distribution. There was also the fact that Mr. Markovich had a prior drug distribution conviction, and then he's got the loaded gun. So if the first question on the table is there evidence that it would at least permit an inference that he is a drug dealer, then that's what we need to focus on. It's not that that's necessarily the only possible explanation, but as long as it's an explanation that the district judge could accept, then the judge could come to that conclusion. And then turning back around again, could say, well, the loaded gun then wasn't a random loaded gun he has with him. It is in connection with his drug activity, and therefore the enhancement applies.
The fact that you indicated clearly out of context would be enough to support an inference of drug trafficking. However, when we try to draw a conclusion, we look at all the facts, and therefore the statement of Mr. Markovich saying people are trying to kill me, but I think you're focusing on the drugs. We know there's a blood test, and this is what's significant. It's his birthday, and he's got quantities that, although ambiguous under out of context, in this particular context, his blood test, which is one piece of evidence that we moved into evidence because there was no trial, showed a quantity of cocaine in his system. I think you would have seen the white particles in the vial when they drew his blood. And you know, it's easy to laugh, but I've done, as I indicated in the brief, lots and lots of drunk driving cases. I've never seen a case where the highest might be in the 100 nanograms per milliliter of the metabolite. 3,000 is incomprehensible. If it had been 1,000, I would have said I've never seen anything like it. This had to be virtually toxic amount. Therefore, the argument is, yes, you could say that the quantity is ambiguous out of context, but when you look at the fact of what was happening at the time, then if you have the totality of the circumstances, the only conclusion to be drawn is it is for personal use. He's not involved in trafficking.
I mean, I have to ask, how could he possibly have used any more at that point? I mean, 4 grams. I mean, sometimes you see 1/10 of a gram quantities being distributed. Sometimes, you know, as I say, he still has 4 grams that he hasn't ingested.
Absolutely. And I think that the argument is that this is a quantity that, given how much he's using, we know from many cases that people talk about what are the quantities that incredibly addicted drug abusers might be using, and they can easily go through 4, 5, 6, 7 ounces in the course of 24 hours or 48 hours.
You don't mean ounces, I hope, grams.
I meant quarter. Yeah, quarter ounces. Clearly, yeah. 7 grams would be a quantity that on his birthday he could have in his possession. And if you gave him another few hours, probably would use. And you think, well, that's an inference. But the argument is that the judge's inference is not supported by all the other facts.
Are you taking the position at all that Judge Shabazz should not have taken into account the prior drug distribution conviction?
The prior drug distribution was marijuana. In this particular case, Mr. Markovich has, 5.5 grams of marijuana in a little baggie. I'm not sure that you can draw the conclusion that because one person, and I guess the argument is yes, he's wrong, that you, just because you once sold marijuana at some fire date, I'm not sure you can draw the conclusion now they're selling cocaine.
I mean, the judge actually uses the word propensity at one point in his
Absolutely, and I think he's
statement.
Wrong just to simply draw the conclusion that if he did it before, he's doing it again. And in fact, some of his statements there, you know, it's clear from his own statement, I'm speculating, you know, that maybe he just used so much that he couldn't use anymore. Doesn't necessarily mean he's selling it. I mean, that statement in the record appears to be I'm speculating, which is a difference from drawing an inference based upon facts.
How many cases do you know of where the user are carrying scales rather than the seller?
Well, the problem is that I don't know that when we read and read and read cases, we don't see cases that hinge upon that single fact. I can't tell you that I can cite to a case either way that a mere presence of a scale and nothing more indicates
traffic, well, that's,
or a mere scale and nothing more indicates bond.
The ones I'm familiar with, I suppose, over the years have been sellers who have scales in their possession. I have never heard of a user, just a street user carrying scales.
I think the reality of the world is such that we don't get reported cases because you wouldn't see people being prosecuted and convicted and then those facts presenting themselves to court, where if you go into somebody's house on a search warrant that we know are users and they have a small scale around, that it ever could possibly generate a case that would end up being reported and then appealed. And I know that I'm not trying to speculate, but I can't imagine a fact scenario that would present itself to the court. And this, apparently, my argument, I don't think this is first impression, but it's getting close to that. Where if all you've got, I think of the Hodge case from Alabama, you know, would odds be decided differently if the person simply had a small scale in his pocket, you know, with a tiny, if a person was caught in their car with a joint, but they had a small scale, and there was a gun in the trunk, you know, again, that's the extreme set of facts, but it tries to answer your question.
Okay, Mr. Ginsburg, you want to reserve some time?
Yes, please.
Okay. Ms. Rumbelow?
Thank you, Your Honor. I would also like to thank the court for allowing us to appear telephonically. The weather is much better up here today, but yesterday was raining, so thank you again. What Mr. Ginsburg overlooked is the proximity of this handgun to the narcotics. And this handgun was readily accessible. It was loaded. It was in Mr. Markovich's waistband, not in the trunk of the car. He was wearing the coat that contained the narcotic drugs. Two types, cocaine, and as Judge Wood noted, it was 4 grams. It's easy to draw an inference that that is an amount that can be distributed. Again, as Judge Wood noted, people distribute tenth gram quantities all the time. So you've got a scale, two different types of narcotic drugs, in his coat pocket, in close proximity to a readily accessible loaded handgun. Then he makes the comment that people are trying to kill him. We have no idea why Mr. Markovich thinks people are trying to kill him, but you could speculate, as Mr. Ginsburg just did, you know, why? He's a drug dealer. You know, there's a lot of violence that accompanies drug dealing.
You could also speculate, it seems, under the circumstances, that he was so wigged out on cocaine at that point that he was afraid. He was just paranoid.
He could, but yet he would think that, you know, he's out in his car on his birthday. He's wigged out. He armed himself. Presumably, we don't know. The facts are not in the record at what point in the evening he armed himself. But again, because there are two permissible views of the evidence in this case, and Judge Chabaz did not clearly err when he considers the fact that you've got 4 grams of cocaine, 5.5 grams of marijuana, and a scale in very close proximity to a readily accessible loaded handgun.
But Ms. Rumble, Judge Chabaz said two things that concerned me. One was the comment about propensity to do this that I mentioned earlier. And the other is that at some point in the transcript, Judge Chabaz says, well, we all know that drug dealers keep a little bit back behind to consume for their personal use, and that seems obviously to be what Mr. Markovich was doing. And I'm concerned that these are both off in the field of speculation and even away from the more relaxed evidentiary standards we have for sentencing.
Those comments may have been, but I don't, and I think that those were just simply comments of the court and not his actual findings. Again, the court relied upon the presence of the narcotic drug along with the scale and the proximity to the loaded handgun. So Judge Chabaz did indeed make those comments at sentencing, but I don't think that they resulted in, I don't think he really weighed them when making his ultimate findings of fact that would support the application of the 2K2.15 enhancement.
What time of day or night was the arrest made, or the stop made?
The stop was made at approximately, I think it was evening, but it's not indicated in the in my brief.
Do we have a location?
It was in Madison, Wisconsin.
No. Yeah, I know that.
Obviously,
but
don't hold on. Right here. That might figure it. No, even in the pre-sentence investigation report, the facts are just limited to a Madison police officer was on routine patrol when she witnessed the driver driving erratically within the city limits. There's no evidence in the record as to where the stop took place within the city of Madison and what time that it was.
Okay.
So again, when you look at what the government has to prove by preponderance of the evidence, And when there are two permissive views of the evidence, I think it's very clear in this case that Judge Shabazz did not clearly err when he found that this enhancement was applicable because of the drug, the nature of the hand. It was a handgun, the proximity, and the fact that it was loaded. So the government would ask the court to affirm the judgment conviction order of the district court.
Thank you, Ms. Rimbaud. Ms. Ginsburg?
Thank you. Just to respond, I think I have a very difficult burden to say that the district court was clearly wrong when there's an inference with the scale. And I can only argue that there's a scale, but when we talk about is it only for personal use, given how much he was using at that time, given the fact that there's nothing else there to suggest he was on his way to deliver drugs, or we know he was buying the drugs because he's using a ton of it, and therefore, if when we draw an inference, if there's four facts in support of one and one in support of the other, does that mean that the Court of Appeals has to defer to the trial court? They say, well, one fact could lead to this inference, therefore it's supported. I think that my argument has to be, if you look at all of the facts, the totality of the circumstances, then it's clear that the scale in and of itself is not indicative of trafficking. If it's trafficking, I concede that the gun's presence is enough. I would dispute if the government, we haven't talked about it, is simply possession. I think the government takes a position. Even then, that's enough because we know possession is a felony and Irby supports it. But Irby was clear that they were using the gun in connection with actually just possession.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Ginsburg. Our thanks to both counsel. Ms. Ginsburg, an additional thanks to you for accepting this appointment and ably representing Mr. Markowitz. Okay?
Thank you.
All right. I hope it stops snowing then in Massachusetts.
Finally. Well, you're done for the day. I was going to call the attorneys from the first argument from Madison and ask them why they didn't give us a ride.
All right. Well, you can do that. Okay. Well, thank you. And the case is taken under advisement. The court will stand in recess.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Bye-bye.